Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Mustafa Elhagar. This is Joe's podcast, as you probably already know, where he interviews millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. But today, the tables have turned.
Yes, they have.
And now we'll be interviewing him.
Yeah, that's happening. So. Before we start, I just want to say that I'm going to be, Stav is guiding this. I will just be manning the controls to make sure people can hear us. But other than that, Stav is the, well, the reason I wanted to do this before.
See, I was going to ask, that was my first question.
Okay,
dude.
Go ahead.
Am I the host? If you're going to do this, if we're going to do this.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, Joe, I want to what's the expression about the elephant in the room?
I want to address the elephant in the room.
Address it, yes. So what's the reason for wanting to get interviewed instead of being interviewed?
Well, in Mark Maron's podcast, WTF, Mike Birbiglia interviewed him for his 200th episode.
For normal people, Mark Maron is a really famous podcaster.
Yeah, he has he is the most popular podcast, or one of the most popular podcasts.
Continue.
Pete Holmes got interviewed by Chelsea Peretti for his 100th episode. So I figured, why not outdo both of their narcissism and get interviewed for the 50th episode? But I'm probably gonna be doing it for the 40th because I always wanted to eventually get interviewed, but like I wanted to do it further down the line. But Stav is leaving for Baltimore for work on Monday. Wednesday. So I was like, let's just do it for the 40th instead of the 50th. So yeah, I just figured why not just do it.
Well, enough about me. I am moving, and it's crazy because I didn't know that until I was supposed to move at the end of the summer, but it's July and I'm moving next week. But enough about me.
Yeah.
So I would assume I'm trying to think of questions that people want to know about you.
People want to know things about.
I assume people kind of are interested, Joe, to hear about.
Well, before you keep going about something more about the other question, I figured why not even outdo their narcissism even more. Besides doing it earlier, but even do it when this show is not nearly as popular as theirs, and no one even knows me. So there isn't. I don't feel as if there's a crying. Desire okay. for me to be interviewed, but yes, continue. I wanted to say that as well, just as a little, right. I don't want people to think that I'm more important than I am, or that my show's more important than it is. But since you're my best friend, since you're the most frequently repeated guest, I always wanted you to be the one to interview me. And since you're leaving soon, I didn't know if that would be able to happen. So I was like, why not just step on it now?
Okay.
Anyway, continue. Go. Yes.
Now that we all know that Joe's a narcissist.
If anyone listens to the show, I'm sure they already know that.
Yeah. So, to anyone listening to the show, I'm wondering, as much as I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
I've been around you many times when random people come up to you that I had no idea listened to your podcast, and they're like, "Yo, Joe, I love your podcast." I remember one person, Ryan Griffin, was even like, "Yo, I didn't even know what podcasts were, and I listened to yours, and you got me into podcasts."
Mm-hmm. Opened a whole world of podcasts to him. Yeah,
and not that I wasn't confident that was going to happen, but the reason why I preface it is because my question is, what was your reason initially? Why did you want to make this podcast?
Oh dear. Well, I've said it before a lot in the show, but it was for several reasons. After I graduated college, there was a lull of summer where, I came out of college. My parents were very gracious in letting me live at home and try to save up some money. And I just came off applying to grad school for acting. And I didn't get into places that I would have wanted to go to, so I didn't go to any. I got waitlisted at Rutgers, Mason Gross. And, I wanted to start pursuing acting that summer, but it wasn't happening as quickly as I wanted it to. And I was kind of doing a lot of nothing. And then just like I kind of opened the door of podcasts to Griffin, Ryan Griffin, I saw on IMDb a news article about how the president, President Obama, said the N-word on this show that I had no idea what it was. And then I found out that that was WTF with Marc Maron and that President Obama was on. And I had no really, as much as I was interested throughout my entire life with the entertainment industry, for some reason, I stupidly didn't pay much attention to the whole podcast world. And I loved interviews and I loved hearing celebrities I liked and other artists I liked. I liked hearing them get interviewed. So I have no idea why I didn't know about them. But long story short, I got obsessed with podcasts in like those 3 months.
Obsessed is an understatement.
Obsessed is an understatement. Yeah. I literally would probably listen to like 4 or 5 episodes of podcasts a day.
Well, what do you get out of, cause I mean, I get that question too. And
yeah,
and I'm not asking out of, like being like, oh, like what the hell's wrong with you? Cause I mean, I got into podcasts around the same time you mm-hmm. did and I use them every day, but why, what was the reason why you became so obsessed?
I think that there's a lot of different reasons why people kind of like to listen to podcasts. And I think I fall into every one of those reasons. And I think one of them is someone who wants to learn more and to hear people talk about things that interest them. There's specific podcasts. So there's, for me, I like the entertainment industry. So Marc Maron's podcast is great because he usually interviews people from the entertainment industry. So there's people who like to learn about something specific. And then there's people who are maybe a little isolated, maybe a little alienated, maybe who like some time to themselves, but still want some type of company, even if it may be a fabricated, like kind of like a not,
You talk about the listener?
Yeah, the
so
listener.
Like, this is the kind of person, this kind of a listener is this person.
Well, talking. I don't think all podcast listeners
This is the market.
Yes.
This is a specific market of podcast listeners are what you're describing?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's probably different levels of people who listen to, or like the degree of which they listen to podcasts, but like someone who's really into them, I think they're either really into a specific subject that they want to learn more of, or they're just generally a kind of an isolated person who likes to just be with himself, but also uses that as kind of a blanket.
Like to have company around him or her, but without the pressure of having to respond.
Yes, that's Jonah Hill. I heard an interview say he was a huge Howard Stern fan. He says the reason he listens to Howard Stern is because it's like he's hanging out with a group of really funny friends, but he doesn't have to contribute to the conversation.
It's just selfish.
Yeah, it is selfish.
No, I'm kidding. But it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's I think what my
fact. Fair though.
But also because I like interviews and I like learning from people who I know to be smarter than me. But in terms of why I wanted to make one, I was like, I need to do something. Like this acting thing isn't going as quickly as I wanted it to. Like it's not really happening. So I feel the need to do something creative, but I didn't know what to do. And then I just figured, why not make a podcast about what I'm experiencing? I learned in school and film as a film major that people's best work is often the most personal. So why not make a podcast about what me and a lot of other people are experiencing right now, which is we don't know what we're going to do next. We're in this weird kind of purgatory between childhood and adulthood and kind of try and gauge that in people. And there are other reasons too that I kind of found more down the line, but maybe didn't have fully realized within myself when I started. But and those being, I don't really trust, or before doing the podcast, didn't really trust in my kind of my desire to actually like want to be around people. Or kind of think that I actually enjoyed people,
like enjoyed listening to people's stories.
Pretty much, I thought I was a sociopath. Like I thought I like didn't care about anyone but myself.
Why did you think that?
Because like you know when you like hear like someone say something that's like supposed to be sad, that's supposed to make you feel bad,
right?
Like oftentimes
evoke empathy or sympathy.
I don't think I'm the most empathic person. Sometimes
empathetic.
I think empathic is a word too.
Okay.
I think that's a word.
I'll let you think that.
I think it's a word. I've heard people say it in podcasts.
I feel sympathy for you, so I'll let this one go.
Okay, well, but you know what I'm saying? I feel as if...
You feel like you lack empathy, or relatively, you did at least, before this podcast.
And I feel like unless... Yes. I wanted to use the podcast as a way to make sure that I could actually engage with a human being and listen to...
Have you always felt like this before this podcast? Like, have you always felt like you lacked empathy?
It was something I started to, I think, more thoroughly realize at the end of college.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that, like...
Don't be afraid to ask me anything, by the way. If I don't want it in here, I could just take it. Trust me, I wouldn't do this if I wasn't.
Okay. So do you think that this realization was a moment of self-awareness that always been something that you've had throughout your entire life? Or was it something that... Maybe like this lack of empathy was something that you recently developed, and that you realized that you were lacking this empathy. Does that make sense?
I think it kind of was something that was always a part of me, unless I found the person to be very interesting, and then I would be more willing to be engaged with people. But I think I found ways. I think I found coping mechanisms to kind of, cloud over what my actual innate urges with people are. Meaning, I think that if I didn't want to be going out and talking to people, or if I didn't want to socialize, I would use drugs or alcohol. And then when I wanted to stop using those as much, I think it would come more into fruition. So I think that...
So you're saying that, like, because you naturally were weaning off, like, I mean, at least alcohol, then that like vehicle of social, like inhibiting.
I think by the end of college, I became more self-conscious.
Yes.
Because I think before that I wasn't really self-conscious.
Yes.
And that manifested itself in several ways in eating, in how I interacted with people.
Right. You were kind of like, your immaturity was almost like made you more in the moment. And as you matured,
my immaturity made me more of an extrovert.
Yes.
Whereas
more not really thinking about your actions, which caused you to be more naturally social.
Yeah.
But once you started to become self-conscious,
I don't think I like anyone or myself. Like that was, I think that was,
that's when you started to become self-aware of many of the things that you were doing.
Right.
Whether it was the dieting, whether it was your social interactions,
right,
or maybe even your career aspirations.
And I started asking questions, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? And then I kind of started finding answers, and I was like, maybe I'm like not as social or like of a person as I thought. Maybe I don't actually care about people as much as I thought. Maybe I'm like a worse person than I thought. So part of doing this podcast was wanting to...
Self-exploration.
Yeah. Wanting to like... And also after college,
and to prove it to yourself,
I always kind of liked the fact that I was a lone wolf. I was like, I don't need anyone.
Right.
Like,
well,
I need my...
it's easier. It's the path of least resistance.
Yeah. I was like, I have my core people. Like, I have you friends and other, like, I don't need to know that many people. But then after college, it was the first, I've said this before, it was the first time where I didn't feel like a part of anything. I was like, oh, well, now I'm really kind of alone. And I found myself yearning for some type of connection, and realized that that connection with another human being does have worth, and that maybe it is something that I need, because it's something that every person needs, which is what I've learned. And it's kind of arrogant to think that I wouldn't need that. And I realized I need help here. Like, I'm not doing well 3 months out of college. Like, I don't know where I'm going next. Does everyone have these feelings? Why don't I make people talk to me for an hour so I can learn from them, see how they're emotionally doing, and see if they're going through the same things. Ask them questions that I have of myself, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Through hearing them, you're almost listening to yourself.
Yes. And I could include things that people say into my own way of thinking, or I can discard things that I don't think kind
of... Right, you're kind of forcing yourself to develop the skill.
I was kind of making an excuse to
push yourself.
Putting myself in a situation where I needed to be able to engage with someone one-on-one.
So I think, I could be wrong, but I think generally, the relationships with people is, you meet someone new, it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that deters most people from continuing to develop that relationship.
I was never that, though.
What?
not able to talk to someone new or meet
someone. I know, but I think as you become more self-conscious,
it
becomes more and more uncomfortable around new people. And I think it almost overshadows the huge value of creating new friendship.
Right.
And it not only overshadows it, but because the uncomfortability comes before the developed friendship, then you kind of cut off the friendship before it happens because all you're experiencing is the uncomfortable beginning.
Right.
And I think maybe what you started to realize was...
like why people don't want to watch Game of Thrones.
What? Yeah, yeah. Like why people... because the first season sucks, but once you...
Well, it's not that it sucks. It's a whole new world that you have no idea of what it is.
Sucks. The experience sucks. Because, relatively. Because it's uncomfortable and it's new to you and you feel like an outsider.
Right.
And you're like, am I getting this? Is this show liking me? Am I liking the show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then once you get into it, you love it.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people who watch Game of Thrones or who tried to watch Game of Thrones, like Paolo, he hates Game of Thrones because, and I've talked about this with him recently, is... because he can't get over the first season, so he doesn't see the value of watching the rest of the show. And I think that's kind of where the situation you were with people in, that maybe you couldn't get over the first season with people, so you didn't find the value of the rest of their relationship. And I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, you started to realize that I just need to develop the ability to get past the first season and use this podcast as a vehicle to push myself through so that I can develop these great relationships that do have a lot of value that I do realize now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was of an ilk that I had a moment where I was like, no one is interesting. No one, like, everyone sucks.
A little arrogant.
Very arrogant. Not even that I thought I was the most interesting.
No, but it's like naive and arrogant. Like, it's a half naive, half arrogant.
And it was from listening to, like, interviews with comedians and, like, other people that I found so interesting. Be like, why is no one like this in real life? And it was, like, kind of, like, not even wanting to waste the time getting to know someone who I think is just boring. But then through doing this podcast, I realized that everyone is interesting in their own way.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So long story short, that's why you created the podcast.
Yeah, long story short, yeah, I just wanted to do something creative plus all that other stuff.
Well, yeah, and you've always been a creative person. And I think, like, to contrast in regards to how convey your creativity versus your brother, your twin brother. You're both very creative people, but you convey that creativity in very contrasting ways.
What do you mean? Like we manifest the creative? Like we?
Well, no.
We
show I mean, like Ben's creative interests are sports.
Is that creative?
I think in a way. I think like when you make a play or
actually, yeah, I think being an athlete. I think sports is very artistic. To be honest,
I do too.
And it's also the only thing on TV left that can actually surprise you, but that's another conversation.
Except for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But I think the way that you shine through creativity is through like arts, music.
Right.
And like, and theater.
Mm-hmm.
So since I feel like you were raised under a house of sports and theater, sports from your dad, theater from your mom.
Mm-hmm.
So like, was it always...
Sports and arts, yeah.
Was it always a thing that you knew that you were more one way than the other?
Right.
Or because you were kind of raised in such an equilateral, like, house of both?
That's such an interesting... I think about that stuff is when you're a kid, you kind of think you're good at everything. I mean, when do your true talents become fully realized? And they're not real... Some talents aren't true talents. Like, I'm not the best singer. Like, I'm mediocre at best, right, given competitive standards.
You just start to find where you separate yourself.
I was always slower than my brother. I was always less athletic. But like whenever we would sing in the car, like as a 5 or 6 year old, I didn't like know I was a better singer than him.
So you say that you realized your athletic like deficiencies compared to your brother before you realized your like artistic
proficiencies? Yes. I remember. Like I wasn't as good at baseball or any other thing, so I was like, why not try auditioning for the play? And I took piano lessons at 7. I quit and then tried again, and I wasn't like amazing. Like I wasn't like
a prodigy.
A prodigy, yeah. But I think I kind of grew into them And for fit like film and TV, I didn't really like, I didn't start like taking an interest in movies until like high school.
Right. And that's another segue. Because I always, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever actually said it to you, but I always thought that your interest in movies was an excuse for you to talk to the cool kids in high school.
Really?
In the beginning, yeah.
You thought this in high school?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I had never...
An excuse? Why would cool kids want to talk about that?
Well, you know who won't talk about,
like,
the guys.
Like Diff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like McMichael?
Yeah, hell yeah, because I would be like, that would be like your commonality with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, since when the hell did Joe get into movies?
Yeah.
This is just a fucking facade, so you have an excuse to talk to them.
Yeah.
And I sincerely thought it was like bullshit in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But then, obviously, it's not.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I mean, obviously, it's not, I'm sitting in a room and there's maybe like 50 posters in here, and more than half of them are movies and the other half are shows.
Right.
I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain that Diff and McMichael didn't peer pressure you into putting these posters in your room.
No, they didn't.
It comes from an innate interest.
Yeah.
So, like, you just admitted that, like, you started becoming interested in movies in high school,
right,
and all that. So, like, where did that interest, like, where did you, how did you find yourself falling into that interest? Because you are obsessed with right, movies and TV shows.
I think I got more obsessed initially with the entertainment industry.
Yeah, and that's a better way to phrase it.
With all the players. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember at a very early age, even though I didn't have a very like kind of an intense passion for movies like I did in high school. At an early age, I remember having an understanding of like, wow, so those people in the movies are like pretending to be
who they are,
someone they're not.
Yeah.
And like, I remember like breaking down the whole idea of an actor. Like, I remember The Titans is probably the movie I've seen the most times. I remember me and my brother would come home and watch that movie every day. I think I've seen that over 500 times. And then when I heard it was a true story, I like thought it was a documentary at first, mm-hmm, like as a child. And then I remember I just became fascinated with the idea of like, oh, someone made this. And then when I got to high school, I started taking those TV and film classes and started to more fully realize how like that happened.
Well, so you were, I think you always been interested in the entertainment industry, and that's something that I always saw. Like, you were always interested in music. You always, like, I think we were John Mayer diehards before you were super into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, your obsession with Ray Charles before
It happened around the
Fine.
Same time.
We could argue that John Mayer and movies were the same time, but Ray Charles was before that. Other interests in general,
Broadway. I became a fan of Ray Charles because of the movie Ray.
Okay. Well, then I stand corrected. But but my point is, you're definitely interested in theater.
I wasn't really ever interested in Broadway. I just did theater because it was a creative thing. I liked to act and sing, but I wasn't like a theater kid in terms of like I knew all the shows on Broadway and like had all the cast albums and.
All right. Well, is it fair to say that you were interested generally in entertainment and then eventually really honed into like movies and shows?
Mm-hmm. I remember, I think what it was I saw The Social Network my junior year, and I was like, wow. I've said this on the podcast. I think I was like, wow, this is what a movie can do. At first, I remember the...
What can it do that makes
I remember
you...
the movie ended, and I was like, I had heard that I'd started getting into reading reviews for movies and seeing how professionals talked about them, and I like was trying to kind of understand why... I had known that it was regarded to be very good before seeing it. And I remember it ended, and I was like, why is that so good? And then the whole drive home, me and my friend, whoever, I think I saw it with like Carlin and other people, we just didn't stop talking about the movie. And I was like, oh, wow, this is what...
Yeah, but people feel that way about sports, you know, after a
That's
game.
True.
Like, why didn't you feel that way about sports?
Because I feel as if the way in which people get into the minutia of sports is just kind of getting like... Getting emotional about like it's more of a tribal thing, like you want your team to win,
right,
and like kind of getting obsessed with stats. Yes, you get obsessed with how the high degree in which players can like do what they do,
right,
and you kind of you can get
like LeBron's block,
like yeah, you can get seven. Fascinated with like how amazing they are, like virtuistic, you know what right. I'm saying,
like Odell Beckham.
But I just I realized that a movie is the most kind of diverse type of art, in that it can do so much in just one thing. Like, you can get so much out of it. Like, it's the most human. Like, you can relate to people. It's like a visceral experience, and it's like actual.
You think it's more visceral than a book?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that it's more allegorical?
No.
Than a book?
I just think I wouldn't say it's anything more than visceral.
Just pure,
yeah.
Innate, like, feeling.
Like, you're there.
Inside, yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel it's the best way to tell a story, in my opinion.
So, well, what about, what do you say to critics who say, like, a book allows the person to subjectively create their picture of a story versus a movie, someone does it for you?
I think for the normal person, it's cool to have your own imagination be the creator of what you're seeing.
Yeah, you get to decide what Harry Potter looks like, right? Like,
rather have David Fincher tell me what it looks like.
Right, right, because those are professional artists.
They're the best at.
And you're paying to see.
Creating life. They're creating life.
They're professionals.
They're creating life. That's why I like movies so much.
Just like you depend on Steve Jobs, or you depended on Steve Jobs to make the iPhone. You didn't want to make it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You depend on Martin Scorsese to make a banger with Leo.
Right.
Instead of making one yourself.
Right.
And who knows, you might one day.
I might.
Okay. Well, that's yeah, okay.
That's not really a good.
No, it is.
It's kind of indescribable. I just feel as when I'm watching a movie, it's just kind of like, it's what I would want to be doing most.
Well, let me ask you this. Why is it that how would you be able to answer the fact that I don't have. Like, for me, I like movies. Like, a good movie with a great plot twist, you know, like, I love watching that. But to me, I also find a movie to be like a 2-hour waste of time. And there's other people like me who are like,
right.
Yeah, movies are great, but it's all right. Like, why is it you think that your interest is such at a higher level?
Because I have a better understanding of what it takes to make one.
Narcissist.
The same way I wouldn't be as interested in watching a 2-hour surgery as much as you would, because you understand the complexities and intricacies that go into doing.
We appreciate all the little details.
Yes. Whether that be the filmmaking, yeah. The acting, the everything that goes into a movie.
So do you think that's maybe why you didn't like movie or not?
That is why I don't think I had as much of a liking to them or appreciation them until I started making them. Because I also realized that making them was kind of the best possible situation. It was an amalgam of everything that I like to do artistically. Like, oh, I can be in my own movies. I can make the story. I can film it and make it look how I want. Like, it's kind of a combination of everything that I would like prior to do. And then once I started learning what it takes to do to actually make one, like, or even one that could even faintly pass as like a legitimate movie, I'm like, wow, this is a feat. So when I'm watching Leonardo DiCaprio in his scene in The Lighthouse in Shutter Island, when he realizes that...
spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Shutter Island.
Who he is, who his character is, and he breaks down. To you, it just might seem like, oh, that's what I would do. That's what I would do if I was in that
scene. But for you,
I'm like, wow, he got to that place and made that seem so real.
Right. You appreciate his ability to put himself.
I like how Martin Scorsese held the front that shot that whole time and just let him do.
I could kind of see what you're saying because, like, I'll be honest, because of the same class that I took as you in high school,
yeah.
I had never watched a movie prior to that and realized, and this probably sounds so stupid, but I had never watched a movie before and realized that it was a bunch of shots. Like, it was purposeful shots. And it almost, like, I was almost pissed. Like, I was almost upset. After taking that class, because all I could think about when I was watching a movie was the fact that someone took that shot with that angle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it wasn't just something playing for me anymore. It was something that someone was doing and that I was looking through their lens.
Right.
But it didn't develop into, obviously, as a huge interest
like
it has for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have my own. But, you know, I'll also say, well, you have a thought? You want to finish?
No, I remember I would have arguments with Ked Devine where he said that he didn't think a director of a movie was, like, important.
And yeah, but I also think that he was trolling you.
No, I think I knew when he was trolling me about things, and I think he really believed that. He said, give me a good script and I can make a movie. Like, give me good actors and a good script.
I think that Devine, once he realizes that something is like edging you, I think
that's true. Yeah.
I think he will subconsciously.
I'm like, you have no idea how complicated.
I think
it is.
He was subconsciously.
I was like, what's your budget going to be? What's your budget going to be? What kind of lens do you want to use?
Yeah, but everyone knows directors don't matter. I think that I don't know. I'm interested to see where it takes you because I think all the greats were. Insane in some way, insanely obsessed with the thing that they were good at. Like, I don't even think
that. I'm just so fucking lazy, though.
Yeah, well, you can work on that. I think
most creative people are, though, so that's what I tell myself. But they eventually get around to doing work.
Well, I'll be honest. I don't think I
like. Why haven't I written a script yet?
I could pat myself on the back and say that I have achieved relative success for my age, but I have
not
still
relative.
Have,
more than relative.
Okay.
You have a very good job for your age.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I say that knowing that, you know, I really haven't done anything yet in my life. And like people, the greats have really done, or people who are even like 40 years old have done like, like an infinite amount more than I have. So I understand that. But when I say that, I say it because I don't think that I honestly am obsessed about anything.
Yeah,
as
you
much
said
as
that to me.
You are obsessed with the entertainment industry, the mm-hmm. film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have gotten this far so far,
right?
It's just...
But you are obsessed with making something of yourself as much as I am with movies. You might, that might not be a specific thing, but in college, you were like, I want to be successful. You're obsessed with being successful.
Yeah, I wouldn't... Okay, I can see that.
You tried really hard in college because you thought, I want to do as much as possible and I want to get as good of a grade as possible because I want to make sure I get the best job possible out of college. It was a very realized effort.
Right.
That manifested.
Which is funny because it's true, but it's also nowhere near as specific.
In a way, it's more.
You could argue either way.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know what... And I don't know
the
where.
entertainment industry is very vague.
Well, let me tell you this. I really don't know exactly where I want to pursue like the echelon of my hopeful success one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't know where my job's going to take me. But I think that you're pretty set on knowing that if you're going to succeed highly in something, it's going to be in the industry that you're obsessed mm-hmm. with.
Yeah. Unless I become like a TV video production teacher at a high school in like Idaho or something.
Right, and you grow like a creepy mustache.
And get really fat and eat at the same diner bonus. Every morning. Don't think I haven't thought of it.
And wear black jeans that are above your belly button.
Are you talking about Sim?
Yeah. Referring to a high school teacher.
Yeah, he was
if he's listening to this, I don't really care.
Yeah. Your movie sucked. I'm just kidding. You were good.
So... So, your dad's the mayor.
My dad is the mayor of our town, Bequonic, New Jersey, yeah.
And what political party is he?
He's a Republican.
So, have you ever had the conversation with him about politics nowadays, like this
presidential I think he's election? Less interested in kind of...
Federal politics?
Federal politics as he is opposed to municipal politics.
Because he wants to actually
I think
make a difference.
He, I mean, he was a Republican before he decided to run for town council. I mean, he voted for McCain and George W. Bush, I'm sure, and for Mitt Romney. But no, I don't think he has that much interest in... I think he just... I don't think he has that much interest or kind of... What's the word I'm looking for?
Obsession?
No. Like he isn't. He won't. I don't think he's the type of guy who'll vote for the Republican candidate no matter what if he's president.
Right. He's not a diehard Republican.
Right.
He's not a GOP like obsessor.
Yeah.
Well, I it's ironic because I think that's what makes
because
him,
I'm very
I think,
liberal.
I think that's what makes him a good political figure.
What? Yeah, moderate.
No. Not just that. I think that your dad, him being like, I don't know if jaded is the right word because I don't know where it stems from, but
right.
is. Not as much interest in like federal politics as much.
He cares
as,
about this town.
Which is okay. So where my thought is, I think him caring about this town more than him caring about the federal government.
He doesn't want to climb the political ladder.
Is a testament to not only him being a true Republican,
right,
but also being a great one because he wants to be involved in an organization that will actually make a difference.
Right.
And small.
Yeah.
Small time, which is super conservative, which is the Republican
ideology. Was there a question about that? You're just wondering.
Well, I mean, yeah. Oh, my question was, has anything changed, like, for your family or you or anything before or after, before your dad became mayor versus after?
He's more busy. I get to get PBA cards and I can speed like 10 miles per hour of the speed limit without really being afraid. But other than that, no, not really. I mean, he was already a pretty well-known person in the town, as was our family. I mean, he's lived here his entire life, and so did his mom before him.
That's true. Well, your name in the town definitely resonates. It's definitely up there with like a Stark. that's a Game of Thrones reference. So
yeah, but there.
What would you say? What would you say is the best and the worst part about? Because this is something for me to actually hear, because we are pretty much probably the opposite. Like, no one knows.
Right.
Town wise, no one knows who my family is, and obviously not like. We moved here, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just actually genuinely interested. Like, what's the good and bad of being so popular in this town?
I would have to think about the good. The bad is.
Don't you think that's a little cynical?
No, because the good is what I just said. It's like, I mean.
But you don't think it's.
Everyone knows me, and that's good and bad.
So what's good about?
Well, the thing that's bad
honest,
is
you
that
have to be honest with yourself. All right, so tell
the
me
the thing
what's
that's
bad,
bad is
let's,
that
let's get with the bad news.
Everyone knows who I am mostly. So if I always have to make sure I'm behaving, which is what I should be doing.
Isn't that what we did in college?
Yeah.
Was it so bad in college?
I mean, kind of. That's why we moved off campus. The magnifying glass is on us, me. And I can't fuck up at all because it looks bad on my family, who is a very well known family. If I'm out and I really don't want to talk to anyone because I'm in a certain state, and I see someone who I know, which I probably will if I'm in this town in a public area, then that's a bad thing. That's a thing I don't enjoy. It kind of goes with the whole thing of like, that's
spotlight.
No, not like not wanting to talk to anyone. Most of the time, if I'm out in public in this town, I'll see so many people who I know, and if they don't see me, I just won't go up to them.
So would you say that Ben is a more extroverted person than you?
Oh my God, yes. So I said that in our podcast.
Well, I asked that as that was a loaded question. So do you think that he enjoys the fame more than you do?
It's not a fame. What does that mean, fame? It's
I'm hyperbolizing, but listen.
It's a 5-square-mile town. We're not the Starks. They're the most famous family in the whole northern region of a fictitious country.
Yeah, but you know, this town is very transparent. Everyone knows each other. Like, if you're from this town, then like.
I mean, I get free diner meals a lot. That's a cool thing.
Well, okay. I mean, that is dope because that diner's awesome.
Yeah.
My mom, I went there with my mom on Monday.
And you got kale
she
and
got
quinoa.
The kale and quinoa. Yeah. I actually got a gyro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was good. No onions. Definitely repeat buyer on that.
Yeah, that's what they do, baby.
But my question was going to be.
Is that gyro? Is that what?
Yeah. I probably butchered that pronunciation. But so you would say that your brother is more an extrovert than you are? Right.
Much more extroverted, yes.
So do you think much that he enjoys being a coal in this town more than you do?
I mean, I think it's going to pay off. I think so, because I don't think he sees himself leaving this area for the rest of his life.
Okay, besides that, let's talk about like
right now,
day to day instead of the future. Do you think he enjoys the day to day of being a coal?
I don't know. I can't speak for him. I think probably.
Yeah, more than you, you'd say?
Yeah.
So why? Like, what do you think that he finds? Like, what do you think? This is to kind of to try to objectify.
Are you leading this somewhere? Do you have an idea, or are you just generally curious?
Well, no. I think what I'm trying to ask is like, take yourself out of your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think he likes being popular. I think I'm a person who likes to be a little under the radar.
It's good to be popular sometimes.
Yes. Nice. I think I'm a person who would rather just kind of, which is why I don't know why I'm pursuing a profession that makes puts me in the public spotlight. That's because I like it so much. But yeah, I like being a little under the radar. Like I don't like everyone up in my shit that much. Like, but like this, I'm hiding behind this computer. Like, I don't really care. But like, I guess it's more of,
yeah. But you like to be in the spotlight with the camera,
and that's the thing. I also have a very, very deep need and desire to be liked and validated. But I guess
because you're human,
it does. Yes, but it doesn't manifest itself into like wanting everyone to know me. I like the idea of being popular, but I think it's just, especially in this town, I just kind of would rather be a little more under the radar. I don't know. I guess I've lived with it my whole life, so I don't know.
I get it. I mean, I definitely had a relative similar spotlight at school, and
yeah.
I think the narcissism in me very much enjoyed the popularity that came out of it, but the self-awareness in me,
I feel like we reap more benefits for being popular in college than I do here.
That's true, because the liability was on you and only you, instead of like
my family
being on,
yes, yeah,
someone else who is the kind of person, someone else, not only someone else, but the someone else is the person, the people in your life that hold you accountable to your actions, and like that's what makes it most ironic,
right?
Okay, I'm going to change the course of this. So, the question, it's the standard question, but since you are someone who is very obsessed with the entertainment industry, if you could sit down,
right,
dead or alive, have dinner with, who are the three?
Three people right now? Dead or alive? I don't know. Alive would probably be John Mayer, Louis C.K., Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, so you have a fourth seat. You have to pay an extra $20.
Marc Maron.
Because the waiter's a little upset. You want to keep them all alive. Okay.
They've had most of an impact on my life because that's who I don't have much. I don't have as much of a relationship, if you call it a relationship, with people who I admire who are dead as I do with people who are alive right now.
Probably because of podcasts.
Right.
Okay. So out of those four, I guess, who would be,
LeBron would be up there too.
Who would be the one you'd want, like, need to speak to the most?
Probably Marc Maron, even though he's not.
Even though he's the fourth.
Yeah, but I would want to talk to him alone. I would want to talk to him alone, probably.
So if you could have a date with one celebrity,
probably Marc Maron or Louis. Probably right now, Marc Maron. Yeah.
Okay. Let's stick with Louis since Louis is more popular.
Okay.
But that's good to know.
Yeah.
So if you saw Louis,
right,
he is walking.
Right.
You are at the mall.
Right.
And he's walking towards you.
Right.
But he's not stopping.
Right.
And he already has gotten stopped. You saw it in front of you. Someone like asked for his autograph. So he's like visibly not annoyed, but like just trying to like.
Is he with his kids?
He is with someone else that you don't know.
Right.
Who is an adult.
Right.
And he's just walking towards you. You can tell he's kind of annoyed. He wants to be left alone, just wants to go shopping. This is your chance to get his attention without further annoying him and making him hate you. What is...
I hate hypotheticals.
I love that. It paints the picture.
I mean, but there's always just so many questions. It's like...
I'm answering them all. You have any others?
I guess there's a difference between the hypothetical of like if I could sit down with him and ask him one question, would it be, or versus like if he was passing by and like he didn't want to like pay any attention to me, what would I do to get
what
his
would
attention?
Be the what would be the capturing question to validate credibility of him wanting to further have a conversation with you?
Like meaning he would permit me one question to see whether or not he wants to decide to talk to me more.
Yes, but he's not stopping,
right,
and saying, "Hey, Joe Cole, yeah, go ahead. You have one question to ask me. This is like your chance to go. Hi, I'm Joe Cole, big fan of yours. I really have I have one question. Could I ask you this?"
Mm-hmm. I would probably ask him, do you ever think about whether or not the content, creative content that you make that is most of the time pessimistic has a negative effect on people?
Why? Why would you ask him that?
I mean, we talk about that sometimes, and I would actually, see, here's the thing. It's because I would probably want to ask him, do you ever think about whether or not what you make has a positive or negative effect on people? Do you feel the necessity as an artist to make sure that there's some beneficial effect that
you feel responsible?
Do you feel responsible to make things that will make people better by watching them?
Or are you just more concentrating on the creativity aspect?
Are you more interested in portraying life in the way that you see it or the way you want to portray it? Because we've talked about that. Sometimes like his shows can be downers. They kind of paint life in a way that is hard and it's tough to get through, and it's. But I mean, I could talk about that for.
Yeah, hours. But see, my qualm with Louis, and I mean, I love Louis. He's by far my favorite stand-up comedian. I think he's a genius, and I respect every ounce of his body.
Right.
But my only thing about his show is, I'm not a fake person. I'm not someone who doesn't realize that there are adversities in life on almost an everyday basis, if not an everyday basis.
Mm-hmm.
So when he brings those out in his shows, that's cool. That's cool. Even if every episode of his show has some sort of adversity type situation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't appreciate, because
is the dreading on the negative, kind of
is his approach to all the adversities. Even though at the end of it he's like, is happy go lucky and like he finds the light in every situation. But I think for the most part, like, I don't like his approach, because it's very like, what was me, kind of like lurk, like kind of like, oh, like he's like always kind of like a victim instead of being the. Let me take action and like figure this out and find the light. You know,
I think with Louis, the character of Louis is a fictitious version of himself that is more depressed and doesn't like life more.
Right.
I think he's portraying a version of himself that isn't fully himself, that is an example of a type of person that kind of exists in the world that is a little more sullen and brooding and down and like depressed, that very much exists, but shows that even someone that kind of depressed can still find happiness in life.
Yeah, but
because at the end of every episode, there's always like kind of like a silver lining and like a reason why I feel his show to be a celebration of life, a reason to keep living. This guy is the worst example of a person who could find happiness, and he still does.
Yeah, but you know,
But
my issue is that pretty much every time he finds happiness, happiness finds him, not the other way around.
But he still accepts it. He eventually deflects, but eventually he opens.
Yeah, but
himself
if happiness never
happiness.
Yes, but if happiness never found him, then he would never be happy. Like, what I mean is that, like, it is the epitome of him being the product of his environment.
Some people need some more help than others.
Right. I don't want someone to watch his show and say, oh, it's okay to be that kind of person. Because I don't think it's okay. And I'm not saying that, like, if you are that type of person, I'm not saying, like, oh, go fuck yourself. Like, I mean, I feel for you 100%. But I think the impact that he has on an audience, and him pretty much playing a person that is so dependent on his environment as his source of emotion, is really what's the issue with a lot of people who are depressed.
Right.
Like someone who is not happy needs to wait for something to make him happy, even though I truly believe that happiness is internal. You know?
And then, at the end of the day, I guess you could say you just said that that's the way depressed people are. So like, if his show is about a depressed version of himself, why not depict that type of person accurately?
Right. And that's cool. And that's why,
and I, show
like,
that,
that's
like,
why, like, no, I mean,
it's
like
still if, worth if, it.
I mean, yeah, like obviously artistically it's a great show, and like, I just wouldn't want anyone,
and
to, I wouldn't want anyone to watch a show and feel like it's okay.
Yes. Yeah.
It's
and see,
okay.
That's why I would love to ask him this, because of this conversation.
Because he does have such an impact, and he plays himself.
I think you more reflect on the negative because you're such a positive person, as opposed to someone who's negative and sees someone who's really negative and probably is like, wow, that guy just like laughed because that girl kissed him on the cheek. Like, maybe there is hope. Maybe a girl can kiss me on the cheek.
Yeah, but I also think that to a point, like a minimal point, there was a bit of you that felt okay with the environment affecting
like
you,
his show was self-perpetuating of my,
yes,
or like,
yes, it was like, oh, he's going through that, and he's, and that's happening with him, like it's okay if I, and
because I found heroes of mine were kind of a little more or a little more, what's the word I'm looking for, the thing that Marc Maron is
like,
existentialist, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I could be wrong at the end of the day, but like, I think my philosophy is like, there's a light in every situation. So like, if you are waiting for something that to make you happy, then you're going to wait forever.
For Marc Maron, I'd probably ask him, do you feel as if you've truly, as a smart, intelligent person, intellectual person, do you truly feel like you've done everything possible to make yourself happy? Or do you think you've just become comfortable in the way that you are now and like know that you could still live that way? Do you think it would be better, you would have been better off to, and if you do think you could do more to become happy? Because I think he's a person who is legitimately kind of
he's like aware of like the other route, but he chooses
no
to be
I
the
think
existentialist.
I think he is actively trying to be happy but just can't be fully. I don't think it's fake. But I wonder if he thinks that he's done everything possible to be happy.
It's true.
And I would just tell him how much everything he's done for me.
What is the one thing that you wish you can take from Leo in regards to his Leonardo DiCaprio from his acting that you think would make you? What is the thing that you look up to most when he's on the boob tube and you're like, I wish I had that? What are you most envious about?
Probably, I don't think there is a person who is more able to, I mean, when we talk about actors, we talk about people who are kind of be able to like transform themselves into someone who they're really not. I don't think he's fully that, even though I think he could do that. I think there's still an essence of Leo in every performance of his, regardless of what the accent he's using or what
his
costume.
You always know it's Leo, right?
But I think there isn't anyone who is more emotionally honest or authentic. Emotionally honest. Like, if I was in that situation, how I would emotionally be. And just kind of the subtlety of him, too.
Right, it's not. He's never like trying too hard.
No, yeah, no. It's never. I don't feel like there's ever a fake moment, really. Yeah.
Like,
I don't seem that's believable to me. Like,
almost as if like, holy shit, is he actually feeling that? Like,
yes.
Is he actually getting eaten by a bear?
that show. I mean, people can feel the way however they want to feel about that movie, but like, I felt like that was a person going through that the whole time.
So, like, you think that if you can do that as well as him, like, that would?
I mean, that's what acting is.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's a lot more than that, too.
It's like the athleticism of acting.
Mm-hmm. If there isn't anyone better for having a character who's kind of like in over his head and like has like an emotionally troubled past and
right.
like has to be like have some type of
talking
kind
about
of demon.
The Revenant.
Well, like that is fucking Inception, Shutter Island,
The Departed.
Like all those, like he comes from this past where it kind of like is haunting him. And like you could just see it in his eyes of just like how he manufactures kind of like this tortured authenticity
that evokes empathy and sympathy
from
the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would have assumed that's what you were going to say, but that's very deep and more insightful than I anticipated.
We're at 55 minutes, so we can stop whenever.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, I really do. I got to run. I got a dinner to catch up on to, and I told Ariel it was because of work, so I really got to go.
Okay. Is there any other last questions?
Yeah, I do want to ask you, what's in the future?
What are my hopes for the future?
What are your hopes for the future?
I don't know. I want to just... I don't know. I want to keep doing this, I guess. I don't know. I've been thinking about maybe stopping doing it, but what else am I going to do?
Really?
Because I feel like we're past the point of what the show was supposed to be. I felt like it was, I feel like people, I mean, the initial conceit of was to talk to people who are going through what I'm going through, and I don't know if really people are going through what I'm going through anymore. I don't know if we're all in this shared experience of this purgatory in between adulthood and childhood, but maybe, I mean, we are still.
Why not? Why don't you think? Do you think that people already have moved on?
Like, I mean, people my age. I mean, just it's you leaving and like people are getting a little more settled in adulthood and the real life is like, I don't know.
But I'm still trying to figure my life out.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not going to stop the show.
What? I'm just one step closer. That's all.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop. That was last year. I'm gonna keep trying to do acting stuff this summer. I'm fucking taking classes at UCB. I'm applying to jobs in New York City. I'm trying to do that, like television jobs. But I mean, if nothing works out by the end of the summer or by the end of the year, I'll probably make the trek out to LA and just try to do that and just see what that whole deal is.
Probably a pretty good place to...
Yeah, it's probably a good place to be for me, right?
Yeah. Where are you going to Baltimore? That's where I'll be.
Yeah, right? There's a booming film industry in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's up and coming. Like Hoboken.
Yeah. Any other last questions there, Moof? Thanks for doing this. I say everything I should have said?
I think so, man. I mean, I think we talked about a lot.
Was there anything that I wanted to say that I don't think I said? No, I think I'm pretty good.
Well,
you good? I'm going to miss you, man. You're leaving tomorrow.
I'm going to miss
this
you.
This is like a weird end of an era thing.
Yeah, dude.
We've been like in tandem next to each other since like junior year of high school.
Yeah.
Strange.
It's just another chapter. Yeah. I'll probably forget about you.
Yeah.
I kind of, what's your name here?
All right, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, dude.
All right, everybody, that is it. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Mustafa, who today is starting the next phase of his career in Baltimore, like we talked about. I wish you the best of luck, and thank you for interviewing me. That's it for this week. Yeah, a lot of shit been going on the last 2 weeks, right? A lot of bad shit. I'm just gonna say this. Me and Stav talked a lot about, you know, the power of staying positive and how being negative isn't the answer. And I'm not gonna say really anything more because this is a much more complicated issue. I'm about to leave here, but it's you need to do more than just say love is the answer. But I do know for one thing, hate is not the answer. News articles saying civil war are not the answer. Focus on how we can get better, not on your negative perception of what's happening. Look at the positive to try to get to a more closer perfect situation.